ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're continuing our reading from the first chapter of the seventh canto, which is entitled, The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone. So I think 19 is on the board, but we'll start with 17. Etad veditam ichchama sarva eva vayang mune bhagavan nindaya veno dvijais tamasi patitaha. Srila Prabhupada's translation. O great sage, we are all eager to know the cause for this mercy of the Lord. I have heard that formerly a king named Vena blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that all the brahmanas consequently obliged him to go to hell. Shishupal should also have been sent to hell. How then did he merge into the Lord's existence? So who's asking these questions? Yudhishthir, yes. Somebody's paying attention. All right, next verse, 18. Dhammaghosha sutak papa arabhya kala pashanat sampratyamarshi govinde danta vakrascha durmatihi. Srila Prabhupada's translation. From the very beginning of his childhood, when he could not even speak properly, Shishupal, the most sinful son of Dhammaghosha, began blaspheming the Lord, and he continued to be envious of Sri Krishna until death. Similarly, his brother Dantavakra continued the same habits. So that leads us up to text 19. Shapator Asakrit Vishnum Yad Brahma Param Avyayam Shritro Na Jato Jivayam Nandham Vivasatus Vivisatus Tamaha Shapatora Sakrid Vishnum Yad Brahma Paramavyayam Shritro Najato Jivayam Nandhang Vivisatus Tamaha Shapator Asakrit Vishnum Yad Brahma Param Avyayam Shritro Najato Jivayam Nandhang Vivishatustamaha. The long A in Sanskrit really matters. Just like, I think it was yesterday, whoever wrote the verse, Krishnapadi, you listening? wrote Vasudeva instead of Vasudev. Actually, in the text, it was Vasudev, but he wrote Vasudev. But there's a big difference. Vasudev is Krishna's father. Vasudev is Krishna, the son of Vasudev. So similarly, on this first line today, it's not Shapator, it's Shapator. When there's a long A, you say Shapator. But if it's a short A, it's Shapator, okay? Shapator asakrit vishnam yad brahma param avyayam Shritro najato jivayam Nandhang vivishatustamaha. One more time. Shapator asakrit vishnum Yad brahma param avyayam Shritro najato jivayam Nandhang vivishatustamaha. Please chant. Shapator asakrit vishnum yad brahma paramavyayam nandhang vivishatustamaha. Shapator asakrit vishnum Yad Brahma Param Avyayam Svitro Najato Jivayam Nandhang Vivishatustamaha Shapator Sakrit Vishnum Yad Brahma Param Avyayam Svitro Najato Jivayam Nandhang Vivishatustamaha Shapator Asakrit Vishnam Yad Brahma Paramavyayam Svitro Najato Jivayam Nandhang Vivishatustamaha Vaishnavis Shapator Asakrit Vishnam Yad Brahma Paramavyayam Svitro Najato Jivayam Nandhang Vivishatustamaha Vaishnavins Shapator Asakrit Vishnam Yad Brahma Paramavyayam Svitro Najato Jivayam Apator Asakrit Vishnam Yad Brahma Paramavyayam Vito Najanta Jivayam Nandam Vibhishatut Samaha. Okay, synonyms. Shapatoho. Of both Shishupal and Dantavakra, who were blaspheming, Asakrit, repeatedly, Vishnum, Lord Krishna, yet, which, Brahmaparam, the Supreme Brahman, Avyayam, without diminution, Shvitraha, white leprosy. Na, not. Jataha, appeared. Jivayam, on the tongue. Na, not. Andham, dark. Vivishatuhu, they did enter. Tamaha, hell. Translation. Although these two men, Shishupal and Dantavakra, repeatedly blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu, Krishna, the Supreme Brahman, they were quite healthy. Indeed, their tongues were not attacked by white leprosy, nor did they enter the darkest region of hellish life. We are certainly most surprised by this. Please repeat. Although these two men, Shishupal and Dantavakra, repeatedly blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, Krishna, the Supreme Brahman, they were quite healthy. Indeed, their tongues were not attacked by white leprosy, nor did they enter the darkest region of hellish life. We are certainly most surprised by this. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Krishna is described by Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 12, as follows. Parang Brahma, Parang Dhamma, Pavitrang Param Mam Bhavan. Translation, you are the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Abode and Purifier. Herein, this is confirmed. Vishnu Myad Brahma Param Avyayam. The Supreme Vishnu is Krishna. Krishna is the cause of Vishnu, not vice versa. Similarly, Brahman is not the cause of Krishna. Krishna is the cause of Brahman. Therefore, Krishna is the Parabrahman, Yad Brahma Param Avyayam. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine, Namaste Saraswate Deve, Gauravani Vacharane, Nirvashesha Srinivadi Pashachade Shtarne. Om Agyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya, Chakshur Unmilitam Jena, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtang Stabritang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Nadati Swapadantikam Vandehang Sri Guru Sri Yutapada Kamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavangscha Sri Rupam Sagatatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tangsajivam Shadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanvatangscha Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bando, Jagatpate, Gopesha, Gopika, Kanta, Radha, Kanta, Namosute, Tapta Kanchana, Gorangi, Radhe, Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishavanu, Sute, Devi, Pranamami, Haripriye, Vancha, Kopaturubya, Shakripa, Sindhuva, Evacha, Patitanang, Pavanebhyo, Vaishyavebhyo, Namo Namaha, Daishi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, Dittana, Nasyadvaita, Gadadhara, Shivasadi, Gorbhaktavrinda, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we all have the tendency, desire, understandably, to hear beautiful sounds. Nobody wants to hear hellish sounds. And therefore, in most civilized societies, if not all, you'll find there's a tendency to write beautiful music and beautiful songs to be chanted. But the most beautiful songs, hymns, are the Vedic hymns. And they're meant to be sung and heard every day. There's a class of society, the Brahmanas, who are supposed to be trained in recitation of Vedic hymns, and the rest of society is supposed to hear from them. Not that everybody has to learn Sanskrit and everybody has to, but just by hearing. Just like now we have the appearance of Lord Ramachandra coming up. So since time immemorial, the Ramayana has been sung by Brahmanas, and then all the other classes, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras, they come and hear such recitation. And just by hearing, they become purified, they advance. Just like here it's mentioned, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. Krishna is a supreme purifier because he's a supreme pure. Because he's supremely pure, he can never be contaminated by anything or anyone. Just the opposite, anyone or anything that comes in contact with Krishna becomes purified. Krishna is a supreme purifying agent. And therefore it's so important for everyone to come in contact with Krishna somehow or other. But specifically by hearing. If we can hear, the more we hear about Krishna, Krishna's name, fame, about his paraphernalia, his activities, the activities of his devotees, we become purified. So that's why Prabhupada would say repeatedly that it's this idea of modern educationists that everyone should go to college, everybody should go to university, and they're not qualified, and we see it practically. People, somehow or other, they get out of university and they can't spell, they can't write a sentence grammatically correct. Well, so what is the use of pretending that you were university educated? What is the use of such education? And even, what is the goal of such education? Just so you can eat a little nicer than the person who didn't go to college. Sleep a little nicer, in a little nicer environment. So this is a waste of human energy. In the proper culture, proper Vedic society, even those who didn't receive any education, they were practically literate, but just by giving submissive oral reception to the Vedic hymns, to information about Krishna, then they became purified. This was the culture. The Shudras would go out all day and work, and then in the evening they would gather and listen to some Brahmana recite the Vedas or Ramayana, Mahabharata, like that. And they would become purified, and they would make spiritual advancement. It's not that everybody has to be perfect reciter of Sanskrit. That's not required. Certain class who have the ability, they have the inclination and the ability. Both things have to be there. Many times devotees, well, you know, they've been devotees for some time, and then they ask me, should I go back to school? So I said, you have to have two things, ability and inclination. Both things have to be there, desire and ability. If you have the ability but no desire, don't bother. You're going to waste your time. And if you have the desire but no ability, don't bother, you're going to waste your time. Both things have to be there. You have to have the ability to learn a particular subject, and you have to have the desire, the inclination to learn that subject. Otherwise, you're going to waste your time. So the Brahmanas means that by birth and by training, they have this inclination and the ability to learn the Vedic knowledge. Patan patan. These are the six activities of a Brahmana. Patan, patan, yajan, yajan, dana pratigraha. So the first one, patan, patan. Patan, you have to learn from somebody who knows, not independently. Again, this is modern, you know, contamination of the education process. Everybody's thinking, Once they get past their ABCs and their, you know, multiplication tables, they think, now I'm independent, I can learn independently. But Prabhupada would point out that no intelligent person would go to a self-trained physician or a self-trained lawyer. Would you? If you have some nutty legal problem, you don't go to some guy who taught himself law. You want the best. You want Amarendra or, you know, somebody who went to law school and graduated nicely and has been practicing for some time. You don't want an, even a neophyte lawyer, you don't want. You want an experienced person if you have a really serious legal problem. And similarly, if you have a serious medical problem, you don't want somebody who just went to Barnes & Noble and bought some books and, you know, read about hernia and now they want to operate on you. No. You want an experienced physician. So it's the same thing in spiritual knowledge. You want an experienced person to teach you how to make spiritual advancement, not take opinion of every Tom, Dick, and Jane on the street how to do it. No, you want to go to an experience. This is what guru is meant to be. Guru means that person who knows the Vedic knowledge, who's living the Vedic knowledge, and who can transmit that knowledge to others for their advancement. So when we want to advance spiritually, when we actually become serious, then naturally we will approach somebody who knows and who can teach us, can transmit that knowledge. Otherwise, we're just playing around, just like Arjuna was in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. He was arguing back and forth with Krishna, just like two friends. But then when he finally realized he wasn't getting anywhere with that approach, he surrendered to Krishna, and Krishna instructed him. Krishna instructed him. And he took that instruction to heart, and therefore he was able to say like this, because he actually realized or reawoke to his realization. He's a pure devotee eternally of Krishna, so just temporarily was put in a situation so that we can learn from that conversation. Prabhupada would say many times, don't think that Bhagavad Gita means Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. Arjuna didn't need this. Krishna is speaking to us. So Arjuna is now speaking to us. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. Realize who is speaking here. This is the Param Brahma. Not some ordinary person. Not even, as Prabhupada points out in his purport, that you're hearing from Lord Vishnu. You're hearing from Krishna, who is the source of everyone, including Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is an expansion of Krishna. We had a large class of students here on Sunday, and afterwards we went over and we were having some informal discussion. This is one of the questions that came up. Always it comes up. Because, you know, if they hear a little bit about India, Vedas like that, most people they speak to think that Lord Vishnu is supreme and Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu. So one of the students asked that. So I explained to him that in the Vaishnava culture that we're following, Vaishnava tradition, it is accepted that Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the origin of all other incarnations. But if somebody wants to worship Lord Vishnu as supreme, they're not going to be the loser. Let's put it that way. It's not that you're going to lose if you are raised in a tradition that venerates Lord Vishnu as the topmost. But from our perspective, we're hearing from our unbroken line of acharyas, and they remind us repeatedly that Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Ete chang sakala pungsam, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Indriyarya vakyalam lokam, mriyanti yage yage. Krishna comes in every kalpa, Indriyari Vakulam Lokam. He goes to all planets to put down the Indriyari. Lord Indra is the chief of the demigods, and Ari means enemy. So the demigod means godly life, and those who are enemies of the demigods means demonic life. So Krishna comes to rectify things. Again, as this chapter points out, not that he's inimical to the demons. Not at all, because that question always comes up. How was Balaram favoring Duryodhana, even though he was a demonic personality? So obviously, the Lord is not favoring necessarily one over the other. But this is a prison house, and there has to be order in the prison house. If you let the prisoners run the prison house, then there's chaos. So this is what happens if you allow demons to take control. The whole material world becomes chaotic, and its purpose becomes lost, covered over. So Krishna comes to rectify that situation. This is a prison house. There's hierarchy here. There's an order that needs to be followed. And there's a goal to be achieved by being in this prison house. So he comes to rectify that, to reinstate proper dharma, to have the demigods be in charge, because that's what they're there for, so that things run properly. Not to have the demons in charge. Just like in this previous verse 17, it was mentioned about Vena. You know, he was a demoniac king, and therefore the Brahmanas, as it stated there, Prabhupada said, obliged him to go to hell. How did they oblige him to go to hell? By killing the rascal. Normally the killing business is not to be done by the Brahmanas, it's to be done by the Kshatriyas. But he was the Kshatriya, he was the one in charge, and he was a demon. And typical of demons, because he was demoniac, a big rascal, he couldn't tolerate any little rascal. So at least the little rascals were kept in check. But he was missing the whole point of why we have a leader in the first place. Leaders in this material world, ultimately Krishna is everyone's leader, but he allows these kings, leaders, to have a post so they can lead the people to Dharma and lead the people back to home, back to God. That's what they're meant for. So when they misuse the position, when they don't fulfill their responsibility, then they have to be removed one way or the other. So this Vaina was like that. He was a big demon. He was got to the point that he was thinking that he was to be worshipped. He stopped all worship of Lord Vishnu. I am supposed to be worshipped. I am the king. And therefore the Brahmanas, they got to the point where they couldn't tolerate him anymore. And by their brahminical power, they obliged him to go to hell. So Prabhupada points out in a recent, I'm always, because you hear lectures and you read and sometimes it's difficult to remember where you, but one statement Prabhupada made recently said that the reason why there are so many problems in the material world currently, modern society, is because the leaders are all sinful. They don't follow these four regulative principles. The four regulative principles are meant to be followed by everyone ultimately, not just, you know, a few. But especially those who take on leadership, the roles of leaders. They're meant to follow and uphold these principles. These are the actual principles of Dharma. Truthfulness, cleanliness, austerity and mercy. These are the principles, the pillars that hold up the house of Dharma. So the four regulative principles that we follow are for maintaining those four things. Truthfulness. How is truthfulness destroyed, bhaktas? By gambling. Yes, therefore, no gambling. But we see in almost every country in the world, the leaders promote gambling. Last time I mentioned about Monaco, or was it my Sunday lecture I was mentioning? Yeah, Sunday feast lecture I gave. That on the list of 10 countries with the best longevity in the world, Monaco is number one. 89.68 years people live there on average. There's no worries financially. It's a city-state. It's practically, I think, maybe even smaller than the city of Los Angeles. Little country. And a vast portion of their wealth comes from gambling. Monaco has been a mecca of gambling since back in the 1800s, 1890-something, I think, the first casino was opened there. So the vast majority of their money comes from gambling. And the government very liberally uses that profit to have good health care and good everything for everybody there. Practically, they don't grow any food, they import all their food. But people live a long life there. But what is the use of living a long life where you're accruing more and more bad karma to suffer in the future? This is what goes on. Yes, you may live very peacefully and happily and, you know, up to 89.68 years, but if you're simply accruing bad karma to suffer in the future, what good have you actually accomplished? And the leaders of that country, of all countries, any sinful leader, they have to take 1/6 of the bad karma of the country as a whole. So we see, that's why leaders are so violently deposed before our very eyes. We see it happening all the time. They go along seemingly nicely for many, many decades, enjoying like anything at the expense of the citizens, and then one day the citizens wake up and bam, there's big revolution, war, and this leader has to either run away or they get killed. It's not by accident. This is karma playing out in front of our very eyes. But as bhaktas and bhaktins, if you would, as devotees or aspiring devotees, we should understand that karma is not just something that we preach to others. Karma affects us. Quite often we go out and preach to people about karma, and then when something happens in our lives, we wonder, why is this happening to me? We're surprised. Why is this happening to me? It's happening because of karma. You have not yet pull the plug on karma. That plug is pulled when one is fully surrendered to Krishna. Prabhupada gave the analogy of a fan. If you pull the plug on the fan, then even though the fan seems to be spinning, it gradually winds down. So sometimes people may say, well, you tell me that such and such is a pure devotee, but we see that they get sick and this and that. That's just Krishna arranging their lives in such a way, actually to glorify them, the pure devotees, because they're not subject to material karma at all. They're not subject to material karma. But in our cases, if we actually surrender, then the plug gets pulled, and then the fan winds down slowly to zero. But if we never pull the plug, meaning if we never actually surrender to Krishna, then we're going to suffer from karma. It's there. It's there. It's not that you make pay some lip service of wearing tilak and, you know, dhoti and sari, and therefore now I have no karma. No, it doesn't work like that. We have to actually pull the plug by actually surrendering. And then there will be no more karma. And if we don't do that, then we can't be surprised when heavy things happen to us. Sometimes we lose the connection. Again, we preach to everybody else about karma and reincarnation, but when things happen to us, we don't see how it could be connected to things that we did in the past. But it's very much connected. It's very much connected. Our current life is totally connected to what we did in previous lifetimes. The parents that we got were not accidental. We got exactly the parents we deserved based on our previous karma. And everything that we went through in life is exactly, precisely according to karma. Now, after we come in contact with Krishna consciousness, we have a chance to finally pull the plug from here on out. But do we actually do that? Do we actually do that? If we make promises before the deities, before the fire, before the spiritual master, and then we break those promises, then have we actually disconnected the plug? Do we actually deserve to have the plug disconnected? So these are questions that we should ask ourselves. It's not, again, that we preach this philosophy to everybody else, but we don't examine our own. It's, first of all, an internal thing. Many times I've told that story happened right here when Ramachandra was telling Prabhupada how the Sankirtan devotees were increasing practically every day, the scores were going up, going out to the airport and doing 50 big books, 60, 70, you know, like that, a day. And Prabhupada's response was, but are they reading my books? He didn't immediately say, wow. He said, but are they reading my books? He says, I've written these books for you, primarily for you. And then once we actually imbibe the books, then we could go out and sell them. But it's not that we just, the BBT punches them out and we put them in a bag and go out and sell them and we don't read them. You know, that doesn't work. It's not impressive. Just like we reprinted the Origins magazine and Brigapati can tell you the first thing, because everybody was saying, you know, where's Origins? It would be so great to distribute that. Yeah, okay, we reprinted it, but do you know what's in it? If you hand Origins magazine to somebody and they ask you, you know, what is this article about? You say, well, I don't know. I just distribute them. That's not very impressive. If you want to distribute Origins, you got to read Origins. If you want to distribute Bhagavad Gita, you have to read Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, people will not be impressed. If they ask you, what is this about? This chapter says, karma, action in Krishna consciousness. Can you tell me what this chapter is about? And you say, well, I don't know. I just distribute them. That's not very impressive. So we have to read these books, we have to apply them to our own lives, and then we can effectively distribute the books. And like I said, these are hymns, these are songs that are meant to be sung. But if we don't actually hear them properly in the right consciousness, then we remain attracted to material songs. We've seen it happen so many times. Instead of hearing the songs of the Bhagavad Gita, instead of hearing the songs of the Srimad Bhagavatam, devotees maybe skim through them once or twice and then they're not attracted and therefore they start again, you know, you go in the car with them and the radio is set to some music station. You know, it's just, we're wasting an opportunity if we do that. We're wasting this opportunity because we don't know when the day will come when it'll be our final Mangalarti. We won't see the next Mangalarti. That day will come and it's come for so many devotees before us. Don't think, again, this is, that means we're not reading the books. It's like when that child, you know, she was only like, I think, 11, 12 years old, she got cancer, the parents went to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada told them, well, you know, you do like this to make her comfortable like that, okay. And then when she was really getting towards the end, they went back again, and Prabhupada actually got a little bit upset with them. Don't you understand? You're not this body. You're going to die. Just like she's going to die. You're going to die. Everybody's going to die. It's not that we are sympathetic. Oh, so-and-so is dying, and then we don't realize that we're going to die. You know, what? Technically, we can't be sympathetic to anybody. What sympathy can we give? How effective is that sympathy if we don't realize that we ourselves are also going to die? So we have to take it seriously. This is not a game that we're playing here. This is very serious. This is real life. You know, so many reality shows are out there, but this is the real reality show. You're here for some time, and then you are forced to move on. You're obliged to move on. That's probably, I like that term. The Brahmin has obliged Vena to go to hell. Now, if we take this seriously, then we won't be obliged to go to hell anymore. We won't be obliged even to come back to this middle situation. The earth is middle planet, because everything is here is fair to middling. Sometimes a little up, sometimes a little down. Not tremendously up for most people and not tremendously down. Just kind of, mensa, as they say. Middle planet. But if we misuse the human form of life, we may be obliged to go to places where it's really, really bad. Horrible, in other words. We don't want to see that. Or if we're very, very pious, we can go up heavenly planets. But Abrahamabhavanaloka, we don't want to keep spinning around the material world. We want to get out and go back to home, back to Godhead. That's why Prabhupada so astutely named his magazine, Back to Godhead, to keep reminding us. We want to go back to Godhead. We don't want to stay here and listen to the latest songs and hear the latest news and the latest weather report. It's like I used to live in Alachua for a few years. And the joke in Alachua is, you don't have to bother listening to the weather report because whatever weather you see right now is going to change in 5 minutes. In other words, if it's hot, it's going to get cool. If it's cool, it's going to get hot. The weather keeps changing. So that's the way it is in the material world. It keeps changing. It is endlessly mutable. Prabhupada uses that term. Mutable means it's changeable. Whereas in the spiritual world, everything is eternally the same, eternally pleasant. There is no down. So that's where we want to go. We want to go there. Not stay in this place where there are bad, sinful leaders, and therefore the followers suffer. But we cannot have good leaders until society at large desires good leaders. They think they desire good leaders, but they don't really know what a good leader is. That's why the book distribution is important. So people can become attracted to what is a good leader, or educated to what is good leadership, and then desire it. Otherwise, as Prabhupada pointed out when some of the devotees were running for political office while he was here, that even if you get the office, even if you become mayor of Atlanta or some senator or even president, as soon as you say, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, they'll drag you down. Because that's what they want. They want a leader who gives them more intoxication and more illicit sex and more meat and more gambling opportunities. Just like right now in the news, there's some mega jackpot, $500 million, everybody's salivating, if I could only win that. But for the average person, if they won that $500 million, they'd go further into hellish life. They're not going to come here and give half of it to Krishna consciousness or do anything good with it practically. Because even sometimes in the name of charity, just like with Mother Teresa, very famous for charity, but she was feeding meat to Indian children. Here's a culture which since time immemorial is vegetarian. And you go there to develop a good reputation for feeding people meat. You're just giving them bad karma, sending them to hell. So even in the name of charity, they're sending themselves and others to hell. So if they win the $500 million, what's the use? They're simply going to hell faster. So let us oblige ourselves or take Prabhupada's instructions and become fortunate. Listen to the Vedic hymns, listen to Bhagavad Gita, listen to Srimad Bhagavatam, and just zoom back to Godhead. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions, comments? Yes, back to Eric.
Thank you, Prabhu, for nice class. I was just wondering, you mentioned that that gambling destroys the pillar of truthfulness. Meat eating, I assume, destroys mercy. So which of the other two?
You don't know. Are you kidding me?
No, I've never heard this before. Intoxication, maybe cleanliness, I guess?
No. Intoxication destroys austerity.
Okay.
And austerity means the determination to remain on the spiritual or religious path. That's what austerity actually means. So if you intoxicate yourself, you cannot be determined to be spiritual. We see it all the time, and there are so many pseudo-spiritualists. They even chant Hare Krishna, but then they go and have some wine. And therefore, you don't see them at Mangalarti. They never come here. Because they're not really determined to make spiritual advancement. It's just a show. Oh, I love to chant Hare Krishna. I love the sound of the Hare Krishna mantra, but then I go and get intoxicated. So you're not going to make much progress in that way. You know, it's called one step forward, two steps backward. If you go on a journey in that way, you don't get very far. So austerity is destroyed by intoxication. And the last one, you know, you said there were two you didn't know.
Yeah, illicit sex, cleanliness.
Illicit sex destroys cleanliness, but not just external cleanliness, but internal cleanliness also. There are two kinds of cleanliness, internal and external. So when you engage in illicit sex life, you're opening yourself up to all kinds of external problems. In other words, externally unclean. But it also destroys your internal cleanliness, because instead of meditating on the form of Krishna, you start meditating on material forms. Lust, in other words. You're lusting after, as I said last time, someone else's material body, which is just like your material body, which is a source of misery. So we become so bewildered when we're in that illicit sex mode that we simply concentrate on another material body instead of concentrating on the eternal body of Krishna, eternal form of Krishna. Okay?
Jai, thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ajita Prabhu. Just to add to what you just said, it's just a known fact. You can find it in just about almost any modern magazine that promiscuity, that's illicit sex here, there, and everywhere, it leads to so many different sexually transmitted diseases, and that's very, very prominent today, many of which cannot even be cured. So therefore, the principle of cleanliness is supported or developed by avoiding this promiscuous type of mentality, which is being encouraged. As you mentioned, the kind of society and the leaders, it's being encouraged in our society. Well, wherever you go, there's a billboard, it's on the TV, it's in magazines, it's everywhere in various kinds of advertising. And basically, they're saying, yes, be promiscuous. And not only that, but the government is saying, we'll even support you by giving you contraception in order to do this. That's it.
Thank you. Anything else? I think we should stop here. Antara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you.